So the next one that's on the list is an interesting one. I'm sure you guys are aware of this one. Comparing spiritual practices, one being right and another wrong, one being good and another bad or evil, fighting over versions of A Course in Miracles or versions of the Bible, or even fighting over what something in A Course in Miracles actually means. Now, this is interesting. Bill Thetford was at a meeting once, and there were a couple of students in the meeting fighting over something that they had just read and that they were discussing in A Course in Miracles. And he said, "I would rather that you rip that page out of the book than fight over what it says." Because this is about healing. This is not about comparing and needing to be right. This is not about that. And when we use words in A Course in Miracles or even versions of A Course in Miracles to separate us, that is the spiritual ego. Because it's using something quote-unquote spiritual to do it. And I find it very interesting. So we have the Sparkle Edition. Teddy Poppy just sent boxes and boxes over the past couple of months. I facilitate one meeting on Tuesday nights for A Course in Miracles, and we use the foundation version. And on Saturday, the course group that I facilitate, we voted to start all the way over again at the beginning of the book, but use the Sparkle Edition. And it was an interesting thing because I knew that in making that transition, there was going to be something coming up around which one is better. And I can't tell you how many times people have asked me, "So Lisa, which one's better?" And I love the way the Holy Spirit works because I have enough experience now with this. And the Holy Spirit was able to really teach me along the way. But the Holy Spirit basically had me say the same thing in different words, but over and over again. And that is that there is no right book, that they are all useful. And that if you feel guided or attracted to one, trust it. And it may be that you will be guided to another version later. But that we're not really focusing so much on form, but on content. And this is about trust and listening to the Holy Spirit. So it's not the words so much as what's said through the words and what you hear through. And if you're listening to the Holy Spirit in your mind, you will hear what you need to hear. And it was really important that I knew that going in because, like I said, making the transition to the Sparkle Edition has been interesting. But it's been wonderful. And so we have been reading it, and I just tell people it has more in it. You know, it has more stuff that wasn't edited out, you know, and that's it. And so it's been going really, really well. But comparing spiritual practices, another way the spiritual ego pokes its little head up is saying, well, religion is all bad or the Bible or whatever. And there's a funny thing that happens, as you guys, many of you know, that as you heal your mind and you forgive the world, you forgive the Bible, you forgive Christianity, you know, or you forgive whatever it is that you read that you interpreted through the ego before, or you heard other people interpret through the ego before and use, you know, out of context. And you really get that you can hear the truth through it and you can read it. And it's like you're given a new pair of glasses and you're able to read the Bible or listen to people and you're able to sort it out what is love and a call for love. And really get where people are coming from, but at the same time, hear the message that you need. And so there's no one right way. And in the Manual for Teachers, it talks about that too. And I love that. You know, there are many paths to the same place. And that is really, really necessary. In fact, in the Manual for Teachers, it says that there is a course for every teacher of God. The form of the course varies greatly. So do the particular teaching aids involved. But the content of the course never changes. Its central theme is always, God's Son is guiltless and His innocence is His salvation. And that's in the Manual for Teachers. So that's the topic. If you guys want to share on it, and if you don't, we can go on to the next one. But I'm going to drop the mic and wait for a minute and see if anybody wants to take it. Thanks. Okay, no biggie. We have plenty. And that one was pretty self-explanatory. So we can go on to the next one. doing drugs to elicit a higher state and thinking that that makes you awaken without healing your mind. There are these ceremonies that I know that some people have been doing. There's ayahuasca ceremonies, and then there's also taking certain hallucinogens to be able to elicit a state of mind in which they feel like they've reached God. And I'm not saying that anything is wrong or anything is right, because I really truly get that everything is neutral. But the experience can be used by the ego just as much as from Holy Spirit. So if somebody feels guided that they need to do the ayahuasca ceremony or something, then that's fine. That's for them to do. But if somebody is doing it from the spiritual ego, this is how it might look. I am spiritual because I do this. This is what will give me enlightenment. This has all the power. Yes, like Cam said, endowing it with magical powers. Exactly. And the reason why it's dangerous to listen to the spiritual ego in this is because the spiritual ego will have you believe that you need it, that you need it to be enlightened. I once was such a serious pothead, and I smoked this seriously strong pot years ago. I think this was like about 20 years ago. This is before I nearly died. And I really, really believed that it was helping me to get connected with God. And I felt like I needed it because of it. And whether or not I did or I didn't remains to be whatever. But I gave it those magical powers. I told myself, and I really believe that that's the case. Now, if you really believe that you need something to get you there, then you're going to believe you need that something. And you're going to be afraid of not getting it. And it's one of the things that actually fuels addiction that nobody seems to address. People drink, people smoke pot, people take hallucinogens, pain pills, whatever, because it seems to elicit a state in which they feel that they could connect with God, and whether or not that is. So I'm not saying do it or don't do it, do it or don't do it. It's not a judgment. But I am saying it's just an interesting thing just to bring up, that the spiritual ego is insidious, and that we need not give anything magical powers, that the correction is the miracle, that the power is in the miracle, the power is in the healing of the mind. So I'm dropping the mic for Cam. Thanks.
Oh, that is a good one. That's a good one. What's happening by endowing it with magical powers is that then I think I'm apart from it and need to have it, as you were sharing. And what goes unrecognized is that I'm giving it that power. I'm saying it has this. It is this. It can do this. It causes me this. I'm at the effect of this. These are the things that are being said about whether it's an idea of alcohol, whether it's an idea about drugs. It doesn't matter what it is. These kind of hidden thoughts that I'm experiencing the effects of is saying this all, whatever this is causing me to experience this. But it's my thoughts, it's my thinking that's causing my experience, not the so-called substance. Yeah, I think that's about it. Back over.
Thanks, Cam. It's just an interesting thing because for me, I stayed smoking pot longer because of that. And here's the thing about magic. You know, we use magic until we no longer feel like we need magic, you know, but the being willing to see it as magic is key. Realizing that if we remain open and allow the Holy Spirit to use whatever we think we need, and in so doing, show us that what we really need is the Holy Spirit. Give God the glory, so to speak. So the funny part about this is that there are many people who do these ceremonies, and that's fine. I have a bunch of friends out here in Las Vegas that do the ceremonies. I actually just saw them a couple of weeks ago. And when they saw me walk into the room, they thought I was going to judge it because they know that I wouldn't want to do it. But I also told them, I said, I'm not judging this because I do know that if I was guided to do it, I would do it. So I can't really say that something is wrong. It's really important, though, that everything is for the purpose of either healing or separation. And if I use something because I feel like I don't have, and it just perpetuates this, like Cam says, this belief that I don't have, then that's all the effect that I'm going to have from it, you know? But if I really want to heal and awaken, it doesn't matter if I use it or I don't use it, if I listen to that guidance. And for me, and this is just my experience, it's been less and less of anything. I don't take anything now to elicit that type of experience, you know, that I, for me, it's about healing. You know, I don't want temporary, fleeting feelings. I want to really experience real shifting. I really want more and more peace. I really, really want to awaken more and more. And so that's just, we do it until we don't do it anymore. And I do know that my friends who do the ayahuasca, several of them, they go into this state taking this drink where their thoughts become magnified and they literally go through this like kind of inner firewalk where they face their fears and their thoughts and their beliefs, where they allow them to come up and they question them. They go and just question the ego. And if that's their curriculum, then that's their curriculum. For me, my guidance is that that's not for me. But that's, like I said, we need to just trust that everybody is exactly where they need to be, doing what they need to be doing until they don't need to be doing it, you know, however it shows up. So the next one is one that I really love this one so much. I love this. Okay. Avoiding romantic relationships and friendships. Believing that only in solitude can you reach enlightenment. And in the levels of teaching, in the Manual for Teachers, there's this awesome quote that really I feel fits to this. But there's so many things in the Course in Miracles that, of course, speaks this, because the Course in Miracles speaks mainly of relationships. But the plan includes very specific contacts to be made for each teacher of God. There are no accidents in salvation. Those who are to meet will meet, because together they have the potential for a holy relationship. They are ready for each other. And in the levels of teaching, in the Manual for Teachers, it talks about the people come into your life for a reason, season, or a lifetime. You'll have three different types of relationships and meetings. The first level will be the people that you seem to just meet by chance and you don't ever seem to ever meet them again. There'll be somebody on the road or wherever, and you might dismiss it as nothing, but it is a holy encounter. In that moment, you're joining, you're either going to see your brother with the ego or see with the Holy Spirit. And then it goes on to the next level where you have temporary situations, but longer lasting situations. Ones in which, you know, maybe you're dating somebody for a while, or maybe you're working with somebody for a while, or maybe you're friends with somebody for a while, or maybe somebody's in your life for another reason, but for a while. Again, they're in your life for a season. But, you know, you might have some fights, you might end up having some judgments, you might have some conditions, whatever it is, it's because that relationship too can become holy. Whether it's seen by the ego or the Holy Spirit is up to you at any given moment. Really trusting that it'll trigger up the things that you would choose to have between you and your brother. And that's for you to accept and to bring up with the Holy Spirit to heal. And then you have the lifetime ones, your parents, your children, your spouse, your longtime friend, whatever. These are the people in your life that may have the most tumultuous experience with, and you really don't see it as a holy relationship. And to the degree that you believe that this all happened to you, or it's something that you shouldn't be experiencing, is to the degree that it is perfect for you, because it's there really mirroring back the thoughts in your mind based on the belief in separation that you need to heal. And so really allowing it to be a holy relationship instead of a special relationship is just one little shift. It's saying that I want to heal. I want to see my brother truly. I want the Holy Spirit to show me and use this for the purpose of our healing and our awakening and our true joining. Now, the spiritual ego says, I would be at peace if you didn't XYZ. I would feel love if you would give it to me. I would have everything I needed if you were that person for me. And I should be alone, because obviously other people just bring me down, and I need to focus on awakening to God. So I shouldn't be in a relationship. I shouldn't be in a friendship. I shouldn't let anybody close to me. That's the spiritual ego. I'm going to go take my robe, sell off everything, go into the mountains. I'll find a good cave, and I will come back enlightened and better than all of you. That's the spiritual ego. The joke is on the spiritual ego, because enlightenment is awakening to oneness. No one can do it alone. Sure, you can go off and you can heal some stuff, the thoughts that come up in your mind, but you will have to join with your brothers and continue to heal whatever it is that needs to heal. But we heal in our relationships, and that is really, really important. We do, because the only thing we have to heal is in our relationships. The only thing that we have to heal are the thoughts in our mind that block the awareness of love's presence, and they reflect and project onto our brothers. Either we extend the love and the truth of who we are and see our brother truly, or we project the stories in our mind. But the spiritual ego says, nah. My happiness and my serenity and my peace depend on everything around me being a certain way, so I need to isolate. That's the spiritual ego. And what happens? It perpetuates the belief that I'm a victim of the world, or that I'm better than, and everybody's guilty. So this is a big one, and that's why I love it, because I hear this a lot where people go, I shouldn't be in any romantic relationships, especially taking something out of context in A Course in Miracles by saying that that's a special relationship, you know? Being in a romantic or friendship relationship is a special relationship. Really? So show me where in A Course in Miracles that it says that, because that's not what A Course in Miracles says. A Course in Miracles says a special relationship can happen with things, people, concepts, belief systems, the world, anything. And that special relationship is only that you would allow it to be used for the ego, period. To perpetuate the belief in separation. To make it holy, you need only turn it over to the Holy Spirit. And allow the Holy Spirit to use it for your good, for the awakening, for the undoing, for the atonement. You know? So this is a great topic. Somebody want to share on this one about avoiding friendship and romantic relationships, believing in solitude only can you reach enlightenment? Drop in the mic.
Thanks so much, Lisa. I really appreciate your facilitating these 3 hours. I just want to say that, yeah, I do sometimes think that only in solitude can I awaken. I'll be honest with you, like, I live alone, and I love spending time on Gather and listening to different teachers and other sites and teachers that I can, you know, go to Earl Purdy's site and listen to him for an hour with the video, nice, clear, crisp video. So anyway, when I'm home by myself and I'm listening to teachers and I'm listening to someone like you, Lisa, who makes me feel enthusiastic, that's why I listen to teachers, I'll be honest with you, all by myself. Without other teachers, all by myself with the book. But me, all alone with the book, I can find it very dry and lifeless, and I'll start to feel unenthusiastic about it. When I listen to teachers like yourself, Lisa, I'll use you as an example. You know, you give really clear examples of how this applies in real life, and it really makes sense. And, you know, so if I'm home and I'm listening to teachers and I feel enthusiastic about the course and recommitted to, you know, like even tonight I'm saying to myself, you know what, I'm finishing up with the text. I have about 80 more pages to go, to finally having gone from beginning to end with the text. And, you know, I'm saying to myself, you know what, I really need to read the manual for teachers next. And I've read it almost all, I suppose, piecemeal, but I want to read it from beginning to end. And then I'm telling myself I want to read The Sparkly from beginning to end. And, you know, I feel guided to do that next. So anyway, alone with the computer, with the teachers, I feel enthusiastic, I feel centered, I feel good. I leave the house, and right away, like, I'm getting in the car, and the anxiety starts. I mean, and I think, you know, some of you guys know, I struggle with anxiety and panic disorder and all this crap. And it's almost like agoraphobia. Like, I'm okay here at home, and as soon as I get in the car to go somewhere, like, the anxiety will start. And I'm going to give you an example. The other day, like, I had to roll down to the doctor's office, and it's about 2 miles away. I leave the house, and I have visions of having a head-on collision on the way. And then on the way back, I'm thinking, I'm going to find the house that I live in, like, aflame. It's going to be on, you know. So anyway, what I'm trying to say, I don't want to get too far off topic, is that I sometimes do feel that the only way I'm going to get, the word enlightened is heavily laden with meaning, but the only way that I'm going to awaken is by myself, in solitude. Not by myself, but I feel like I can do it at home. And then when I gotta leave the doors of this little meditation cave that I have here, this little basement apartment with my Buddha Tanka and my, you know, my Tara statue and, you know, all those things make me feel comforted. And so anyway, I do. I do sometimes just feel that I can do this best at home, because once I get out there, I get agitated. Yeah. Anyway, thank you.
Thank you, Monica, for saying that. I'm going to say something and then I'll turn it over to you, Cam. Monica, I used to have panic disorder and anxiety attacks too, and I used to feel isolated too. And the funny thing is that the longer I spent in my space physically without going out, the harder it would be to go out. And if I wasn't around people for a long period of time, the harder it would be to be around people. And so it was like as soon as I would go, and it would take such willingness just to be able to go. And then as soon as I would get there, and once I was with people, I can imagine maybe you traveling to be the love, and then you're planning to go to that retreat, you might have had some anxiety and fear around that. But when I saw you there, you were just full of light and love and joining, and it was so good to see you that I know that it's just the stories we tell about ourselves, the projections, but the stories could be loud. So it's just this process. In The Course in Miracles, it says that the holy instant is the time where fear does not exist, in this precious moment. And that when we are full of fear, we're listening to stories in our head, we're either in the past or in the future, but we're not in the present. And when we're experiencing the present, like when you got to be the love and you're joining with us and everything, you had less fear because you were experiencing the moment. And I feel that that's what's happened for me too, but I also really honor your experience in that it's a process, because I couldn't just turn off the fear and that was it. I really needed to go through that development of trust and realize that God goes with me wherever I go. And it sounds like a good statement, but in reality, it just means that I'm never alone. I dialogue, and I still dialogue. Even though the dialogue has changed, I still dialogue with the Holy Spirit and talk. And the more I do it, the better I feel, because I get that I'm not alone. And if I'm going through something, or even especially in the past where I had a lot of trauma that needed to heal, I asked for reassurance. I asked for reassurance. And I used to go to bed and I used to say this little cute little ritualistic type thing, but I used to say, you know, I'm laying in the bed and the bed's your hand, and I'm just this little child of God in the palm of your hand, God. And then I would pull the blankets up and say, and this is your loving protection. Now, I'm not a body, but at the same time, knowing that I am healing my mind. So there's part of my mind that believes it's something that it's not, you know? And then I put my head on the pillow and I said, heal my mind. Even though my mind is not in my head, but it's a great metaphor. And I just would feel this sense of just love, because I am allowing, I'm opening up for the Holy Spirit to do that for me. And so I used to do that a lot. And then when I would go out, I would just say, talk to me and through me and guide me. And whenever I would tell myself stories, especially during driving or in anything, I would just listen to music or not listen to music. Sometimes it would make it worse. And I would talk to God, and I would just talk to the Holy Spirit and say, well, where am I right now? I'm driving, or I'm walking, or I'm fine. You know, in this moment, I'm fine. I don't need to project where anything is going in the future. You know, the spiritual ego would say, you shouldn't think this way, and blah, blah, blah. But the spiritual ego is bullshit. It's a process. It's a development of trust. We don't just get it and then we're done. We're all here going through the process. And so it might manifest in great anger and resentment in one, and fear and panic in another, or love addiction, you know, quote unquote love addiction. But it's all a process. So love yourself in the process and allow yourself to bloom where you're planted. And I'm dropping the mic for Cam. Thank you.